Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Kaveh Tahvayi. Protests in Lebanon and in Iraq continue, but the dynamics of each of those protests and in each of those countries is different. In Lebanon, the Prime Minister has submitted his resignation, with the government there as in a caretaker capacity to continue the day-to-day operations there. Meanwhile, the government in Iraq has enacted the reforms that the Prime Minister had promised, and those are now in motion. In this edition of the debate, we will discuss why it is that these protests in both countries are continuing at the pace that it is, and whether the reforms will actually help the country's economy. At the same time, we are going to discuss whether there are foreign hands on play at both countries.
Violence and vandalism have disrupted normal life in Iraq since a new wave of anti-government demonstrations began last week. Public property has been either damaged or destroyed, and security forces have been attacked during the protests, the first wave of which started on October the 1st. The Iraqi government says people have the right to protest peacefully, but it has accused what it calls undisciplined armed elements and foreign-backed infiltrators of sabotaging the peaceful demonstrations. Since October 17th, Lebanon has also been swept by protests which have caused disturbances in the country. Hezbollah, which was the biggest winner in the May 2018 parliamentary elections along with its allies, warned that some international and regional powers, as well as Israel, are working to take advantage of the demonstrations to fuel unrest. On Wednesday, Iran's leader addressed the ongoing unrest in Iraq and Lebanon, saying the U.S. and its allies are causing turmoil in the region.
قدرت‌های استکباری امروز بیشتر از همه آمریکا، سرویس‌های اطلاعاتی غربی با پشتوانی پول بعضی از کشورهای مرتجع منطقه دارن آشوب بپا می‌کنن در کشورهای همسایه ما و نزدیک ما.
Ayatollah Khamenei noted that the biggest damage that enemies can inflict on a country is to deprive that country of security, as he urged Lebanese and Iraqi people to seek their rightful demands through legal frameworks.
مردمشون هم باید بدانند که مطالباتی دارن. مطالبات به حق هم هست. اما این مطالبات فقط در چارچوب ساختارهای قانونی قابل تأمینه.
Lebanese and Iraqi protesters are angry over their poor economic conditions and what they see as corruption. Baghdad and Beirut have pledged to press ahead with a series of reforms to meet the demands of protesters. But a group of demonstrators have pointed out that their goal is to change the political system in their respective countries completely and remove the political elite. Lebanon experienced a devastating civil war for 15 years until 1990. Iraq is also still feeling the disastrous impacts of Saddam Hussein and Daesh eras. Many are now worried that the creation of a political vacuum in Lebanon and Iraq could help dictatorship, civil war, and terrorism to once again raise their ugly head in the two Middle East nations.
Thank you guys joining us for this edition of the debate. We have Jonathan Fryer, he's an author and broadcaster who joins us from London. And we also have Kevin Barrett, editor at Veterans Today, who joins us from Madison. Gentlemen, welcome. Kevin Barrett, my first question to you, and I'm going to ask you about what Iran's leader has said, who in which he has blamed the U.S. Western intelligence agencies and the financial support of some reactionary states in the region for creating this insecurity and turmoil that we are witnessing in Lebanon and Iraq. What benefits would this have for the U.S., first of all?
Is unhappy because it's been unable to dominate the political process in Iraq and Lebanon. As we saw in May's elections, Hezbollah was the big winner. And in Iraq, the current leader, Prime Minister Abdel Mahdi, has made himself rather unpopular with the Americans by, he's made a number of moves that they don't like. He called out Israel for bombing Iraq and going after militias in Iraq. Now, this is a war crime. This is essentially the aggression. It's the supreme war crime. Israel basically declared war on Iraq, and nobody noticed. And the Prime Minister of Iraq naturally protested, and the Americans got very angry. He's also wants to buy S-400 systems from Russia. He has been giving China all kinds of contracts. In other words, he's one step more independent than these previous Iraqi leaders under the American occupation, which is starting to wind down. And the Americans, having lost politically in Iraq, it looks like they feel like they have no other hand to play than this fourth generation warfare. Some are now calling it fifth generation warfare, when you're just out to wreak destruction, mobilizing as much chaos as possible. And of course, the local countries that are in bed with the U.S., and that would be primarily Saudi Arabia and Israel, feel threatened by recent political developments in Iraq and Lebanon as this axis of resistance of independent nations in the region consolidates. And so they're using these fourth generation warfare techniques, which include either mobilizing or hijacking protests. And so the protesters who have very good reasons to protest, the corruption is a terrible problem in both these two countries as well as elsewhere in the Middle East, but that can be weaponized. And as the protests turn violent, typically the violence is where the hidden hand of these fourth generation warfare experts exposes itself. We've seen similar things in Maidan Square in Ukraine. The coup d'etat there was sparked by these hijacked uprisings that turned violent as NATO snipers started firing on both sides. And this kind of orchestrated violence and chaos is what the leader of Iran is saying shows that the forces of the imperialists and the Zionists are in there trying to cause trouble.
Well, Jonathan Fryer, Kevin Barrett mentioned one point that I need to make sure that we highlight, and that is the fact that we do not want to discredit the protesters and the grievances that they have in terms of their economic conditions in both countries. And of course, the dynamics are different in each. However, at the same time, do you agree with what Iran's leader has said, which Kevin Barrett also stated, that the U.S. And the other countries, as Kevin Barrett said, who are in bed with the U.S., like Israel and Saudi Arabia, perhaps are not... or do not like the political system in each of these countries being somewhat independent from their dictates, and therefore perhaps there is, as Iran's leader said, that there are some meddling or foreign hands at play, including some regional countries that are influencing events as they are happening in both countries.
Well, it's certainly no secret that, of course, both the Americans and the Israelis are very hostile to Hezbollah and very unhappy with the fact that Hezbollah did so well in the elections last year in Lebanon. Hezbollah is classified by the Americans and the Israelis as a terrorist organization, and therefore it's not surprising that they would be keen to see Hezbollah's influence reduced. But you're absolutely right that to recognize the basic justice of the protesters. I don't think that this has been mobilized from outside. May well be that obviously other agencies and foreign powers are following it and maybe getting involved indirectly. But the root cause of the protests in both Lebanon and Iraq is that the political system, which is in both cases very much based on sectarian interests and the very powerful and very rich small elite, is being challenged by the people, and especially the young people who are frustrated. I mean, amongst the protesters in both Tahrir Square in Baghdad and in the huge protests in Lebanon over the last few days, the cries have been very similar, which is basically overthrow the system because we are being denied our rights by a corrupt elite.
Well, one of the things that Kevin Barrett points to Saudi Arabia is one of the stats that came out in terms of the hashtags that were being used in the protest in Iraq. And it's cited that 79% of these hashtags were coming from Saudi Arabia. Some are saying even the Facebook post by one particular 22-year-old from Sad City actually started these protests in Iraq. Saudi Arabia, what kind of game plan does it have when it comes to Iraq in particular, by if this is indeed true, by having, I guess, their ultimate prize there being the overthrow of the government? What kind of plans do you think they may have?
Well, Saudi Arabia has been trying...
Kevin Barrett, please. I'll get to you, Jonathan Fryer. I'm sorry. Kevin Barrett, go ahead.
Saudi Arabia has, of course, been very unhappy with the way the U.S. occupation of Iraq has played out in favor of the majority Shia population of Iraq and in democracy in Iraq. And Saudi Arabia has been funding various death squads, and there have been death squads on both sides, but the death squads that the Saudis and their friends, the Israelis, have been creating in Iraq as part of this this instigated, foreign instigated sort of sectarian civil warfare that's been really the whole game plan since the U.S. lost in its original attempt to occupy Normandy. And so they sent in John Negroponte, the Central American death squad expert, to start creating death squads on both sides. And of course, Daesh was one of those American created death squads, with the late al-Baghdadi having the free run of Camp Bucca for 4 or 5 years, not 1 year, as the official story says, as they trained him and unleashed him. So this kind of chaos has been supported by Saudi Arabia, which needs a weakened Iraq for various reasons, a strong Iraq that's independent and part of the axis of resistance, or even just independent, period, is a threat to Saudi Arabia, which only operates because it's a pawn of the international banking cabal, using its oil to prop up the petrodollar. And the moment that the region turns independent, that world is going to be out, and the oil of that Arabian Peninsula will be used for the people of the region. So there's a big strategic game plan behind this. The Saudis need to try to keep the current dispensation alive as long as possible so they can continue to plunder their people and plunder those resources. And insecurity in Iraq fits the bill. A weak, insecure, chaotic Iraq is unable to assert itself, and it leaves the Saudis stronger. And again, this illustrates this fifth generation warfare concept. The Americans and their allies have decided that rather than trying to occupy and control other countries and control their resources through stable governments, they're just going to go to war against governments and just spread chaos and weaken those governments so that those governments can never use their resources to become strong. And the Saudis are a part of that. They're on the side that profits from this chaos.
Jonathan Fryer, if the premise that we're going on here is indeed true, this could spiral out of control very easily, as we have seen some of the protests, obviously, and the depth of the violence that we have witnessed on the streets. Is the U.S. and Israel, perhaps, and maybe Saudi Arabia at the same time, are they looking for this region to turn up in flames? And then for what? For a war scenario to continue? Is that one of the objectives that they may have?
I don't believe that is an objective, no. I mean, obviously, Saudi Arabia and its close allies, UAE and Bahrain, have a clear interest in trying to weaken what they see to be Iranian influence in Iraq and indeed in Lebanon through Hezbollah, not to mention Syria. So we have to see the whole thing within that narrative of a rather binary contest as perceived in Riyadh and indeed Washington or Tel Aviv, but basically it is seen within that confrontation. But I'd like to pick up another point that you mentioned in the question with Kevin. In other words, the issue of whether we can trust the sources of much of the material coming out, how much of it is perhaps coming out of Saudi Arabian propaganda forms or indeed any others. And this, for journalists like myself, is indeed a big challenge these days. We have to be very careful, and why it's I try as much as possible to talk directly to people on the ground to try and get accurate information about what's happening, because there is a propaganda war going out across the Gulf, and we've known that for some time.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, we're looking, Kevin Barrett, at some instances that needs to be highlighted, perhaps at least briefly, and that is when you see Iraqis, or one particular video where there's an Iraqi that's shooting at the protesters. This is not something that you can blame on anybody on a rooftop. It's just in plain sight, or seeing a motorcycle go through the crowd, or seeing people pulling others, this is in Iraq now, out of an ambulance, and then that led to the death of these two brothers, unfortunately. And there's many other instances that leads to the and points to the direction that some are trying to ride this wave of demonstrations, both in Iraq and Lebanon. However, the point is how is the U.S. and its allies, what kind of objectives do they have by having these countries unstable? Is it because they want to get at Iran? Is that one of the reasons? Jonathan Fryer mentioned that perhaps that could be.
Yeah, that absolutely. They are concerned that Iran is kind of the fulcrum of the so-called axis of resistance. Iran has allies those allies are still independent. They're not taking orders from Tehran, but Iran and its allies all share an interest in building a region that is genuinely independent and controls its own resources and ultimately is free of the Zionist genocidal occupation of the Holy Land. And of course, that position is very much at loggerheads with the dominant position of the West, the Saudis, and the Zionists. So that is one factor. But I think that it's also a matter of these imperial or imperially dominated nations needing to toe the line and take orders from above. Lebanon is getting too independent with the ascent of Hezbollah, and Abdel Mahdi has been making relatively independent decisions. And whatever you say about Iran and the axis of resistance, this pattern is, we're seeing the same pattern all over the world. We've been seeing it since the end of World War II, where in country after country that the empire thinks that it runs or has the right to run, whenever an independent leader arises who starts to make decisions that the empire doesn't like, suddenly various kinds of chaos are mobilized against that leader. And from the CIA coups in Iran in the early 50s, Guatemala, onwards to more recently, this so-called civil war in Syria was actually orchestrated by Jeffrey Feltman, the former U.S. ambassador to Israel, who met in Paris with some American colleagues, some various colleagues, and decided to mobilize Syrian protests and turn it into a war of destruction against Syria. And they could be doing very well, having the same plans right now against Iraq and Lebanon, simply because they don't like those governments having relatively independent leaders.
Right. But the track record that the U.S. has, in particular Jonathan Fryer, isn't a very good one, is it? I mean, we take a look at some of the despots or dictators that they have perhaps supported, like Hosni Mubarak. We could talk about the Shah of Iran. I mean, it's not like they have a good record in terms of putting somebody there. And if all the, again, the premise is true that they are meddling, doesn't that steer away the protesters' aspirations in both countries from what they want, which is economic reform, a steady economy, jobs, etc.?
Well, you're absolutely right, of course. The American history in the Middle East is a trail of disasters, but I think one of the few ways I could possibly agree with Donald Trump is that when he says that, you know, what was the point of all the expense and all the effort, because it gained America nothing, and I think probably he was right there. But there is a danger that the spotlight is taken off the real concerns of the protesters, and I think particularly in the case of Lebanon, where an extraordinarily high percentage of the population has taken part in these demonstrations over the last few weeks, last couple of weeks, and they're very, very real concerns, and most Lebanese absolutely don't want interference from America, or definitely not Israel, of course, or indeed any other foreign power. This they see as an internal issue which they want to resolve.
And Kevin Barrett, since we're talking about Lebanon here, or I guess mentioning Lebanon, one of the things that is starkly evident in the case of Lebanon is that, you have the officials or the politicians that the protesters have accused of corruption. And the one entity that stands out, not only in the parliament, but as a whole, is Hezbollah. Hezbollah is not affiliated with corruption in that country. So do you think that the protesters are smart enough to distinguish between whoever it is that may be feeding them information to go against, for example, Hezbollah in Lebanon and its affiliation with Iran in the context that it's free of corruption?
Well, I would certainly hope so. Hezbollah, like other grassroots Islamic movements, has its greatest strength its resistance to corruption. And that's based on Islamic ethics, and I think that the rebirth of these classical Islamic ethics in these popular Islamic groups, these grassroots manifestations of Islamic resistance to evil, whether it's corruption or occupation or genocide or what have you, this is really the hope of the region. Now, whether the people protesting have figured that out or not, or will figure it out, I don't know. I think that the problem is that when these protests are mobilized around these very simplistic demands like the regime must go, or, you know, it must be overthrown, the political elite must be overthrown, well, that's great, but what do you replace it with? There needs to be some sort of pragmatic program. Just like with the Occupy movement here in the United States, it ended up just imploding, not only because of vicious police repression, but also because they didn't have any concrete demands. If they just mobilized around, let's say, a Tobin tax on financial transactions, they could have actually accomplished something huge against the very financial elite and the corruption that they said they were protesting, but they couldn't think of anything to demand. And likewise, if the only demand is simply throw out the political elite, you know, the Ashab Yurid and Iskat and Idam or whatever, that often goes nowhere except for producing more and more chaos, and it wrecks the very economy that they're trying to fix.
Jonathan Fryer, this Iran issue is something that is reflected in the media quite often and quite repetitively as I'm looking at some of the entries here. But how much of it is exaggerated? I mean, it's not like Iran is dictating terms to the central governments. Iran is trying to be a neighborly country that is wants to do trade with these countries, wants to make sure that they're provided with some of the goods and services that Iran can provide. Like in the case of Iraq, we could talk about electricity being one of the major things that Iran contributes to it. I'm guessing that the U.S. with its neighbors tries to have good relationship there, which is somewhat the same thing that Iran is trying to maintain also here. But is it because of the fact that the U.S. is so obsessed with wanting regime change in Iran, perhaps, again, if that premise is true, that it is underlying a factor for these protests to continue in their support for them? In under a minute.
Well, I certainly think that the ideological stance that the Americans have taken against the Islamic Republic rather blinds them to the geographical obvious case that Iran is normally quite naturally interested and involved in its neighborhood. And what America has tried to be saying in recent years is that, you know, ever since the revolution 40 years ago, that Iran has no right to be involved in its neighborhood. And that obviously seems very strange. But both the Lebanese government and the Iraqi government have tried to reach out to other countries in the region, but they inevitably therefore get criticized if they reach out to some people that Washington doesn't approve of. But it will be interesting to see what now happens. This is the big question, because in Lebanon, the protesters have been calling for a government of technocrats to get rid of all the current leadership and put in officials who ideally would be corruption-free to run the thing efficiently. But that's exactly what the relatively new prime minister in Iraq had said he wanted to do. So it's not an easy solution by any means.
Yes, only time will tell. Thank you very much for that, Jonathan Fryer, author and broadcaster from London. And thank you, Kevin Barrett, editor at Veterans Today. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. From Mikhail Batahwayi and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.